Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
Osiris.
Welcome back to Freak Flag Flying, my ongoing Osiris podcast series, probing the rich, adventurous, weird, and wonderful legacy of David Crosby, whose work in the Byrds, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, CPR, and now on a series of albums recorded with young geniuses like Michael League of Snarky Puppy, singer-songwriters like Becca Stevens and Michelle Willis, and his own son, James Raymond, has succeeded in transforming and deepening the sound of popular music several times over. In the next two episodes, we'll talk with Cros about the creative renaissance he's experienced by working with these young musicians, and in particular, about his new album, For Free, with James as his primary collaborator. By sheer mind-blowing coincidence, my conversation with Cros happened at Hyde Street Studios in San Francisco, which was called Wally Hyder's Studios 50 years ago, when he recorded one of my favorite albums of all time, If I Could Only Remember My Name, with the cream of the crop of psychedelicized folk musicians from bands like The Grateful Dead and Jefferson Airplane, the so-called Planet Earth Rock and Roll Orchestra. It's a very special place, and the vibes in those studio walls where classics like The Dead's American Beauty and The Airplane's Volunteers were recorded made our conversation even more thrilling. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Steve.
Hi, Dave. It's great to see you. And it's a freaking cosmic coincidence that we are sitting in this room at what's now called Hyde Street Studios, but was once called Wally Hyder Studios.
Mm-hmm.
And it was here that you made a couple of albums, actually, but one album that stands very, very high in your history, If I Could Only Remember My Name. So, David, you are about to come out with another album in an astonishing creative renaissance in the last few years. And one of the things that has spurred you on to that renaissance is playing with cool, sexy, brilliant, talented young people like Michelle Willis, Michael League, and Becca Stevens. How has playing with those young musicians inspired you to make really... what is it, five albums now, I think, in the last few years?
Them and James, mm-hmm. who's not as young as they are, but is much younger than me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll tell you what I think, man. I think that when you get to the end of your life, and I'm certainly at the end of my life, you peter out as a writer. I say that because I watched all the writers I know do it.
Right.
Great writers. Stunning writers. You get to the end, yeah, okay, the great moments come less often.
Mm-hmm.
I think my writing with my son James, who's now gotten to be, if anything, even better than me, writer's that good. Michael League and I wrote three of my favorite songs in the first 3 days that I knew him. Yeah. The point is, those people, them, those two,
yeah.
and then Michelle and Becca.
Yeah.
Becca is probably one of the most amazing writers I've ever run into.
Yeah.
I'd give her a notch above almost everybody else I know.
She wrote Vagrants of Venice on Here If You Listen, correct?
Really good.
That's one of my favorite Crosby-related songs.
Well, I wrote
time.
A good set of words, right. Man, and I trusted her because she is odd.
Yeah.
And she does go to places other people don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I trusted her, and I won.
Yeah.
Vagrants of Venice is a great song.
Fantastic.
So is...
By the Light of Common Day.
By the Light of Common Day, man. It's two of my best songs.
Yeah.
She wrote the music, both of them.
Yeah.
And she's good.
Yeah,
well, point being, and she's not the only one, you know, McDonald's written with me a couple of times.
And we're talking about Michael McDonald.
Michael McDonald is a wonderful writer, man.
Yeah.
What these people have done, particularly the young ones, is extend my useful life as a writer by probably 10 years.
Yeah.
Because I'm not afraid to write with somebody else. I'm not trying to hold on to all the money or all the credit or, you know, say, it's only me. I do this by myself. I don't need that. I need a great song. Imagine two painters. They have two different palettes, two different sets of colors. If they both work on the same painting, get a better painting.
Yeah.
More colors to work from. The thing I love about writing with somebody else is they always, every goddamn time, think of something that I didn't.
Yeah.
That's part of why you do it. Because you get a wider scope of ideas and creativity. And it's worked for me. These records are, I'll give them excellent. I think they are.
Yeah, they're excellent.
And I mean, Cross, Lighthouse, Sky Trails, Here If You Listen, and Now For Free. These are five of the best records I've ever made in my life.
They are.
And a lot of the credit has to go to these people that I'm writing with and to me for being open to that. For me to being smart enough to spot somebody when I and say, that's a person I want to write with. Because I do know about chemistry and I do know about songs. And I've been kind of instinctively and intellectually at the same time, you know, going for it in these situations. And I think I was totally right. You know, the proof's in the pudding. They're good songs. And they make you feel stuff, which is their job. So, hooray for me.
Hooray for you. And I wanted to ask you, your first experience of really getting deep into collaboration when the wheels started falling off the CSNY mothership was working with James and Jeff Pivar, the guitar player, in CPR. Did it feel like a liberation to you to be able to write new songs, write songs for a band who actually cared enough to rehearse your new material?
Yeah, there is that.
Right.
It felt like a wonderful chemistry, man, mainly with James. James and I can write, and that is really largely due to how good James is. My credit, I'm a good writer. I've written some good songs. But the credit for me goes to being willing to do that, being open to do that, because what happened is, stunning shit. And we wrote stunning shit together. I don't want to even start opening up the pantheon of stuff between me and James, but it's deep, deep stuff. And some of the best songs I've ever written in my life now with James.
This is James Raymond joining our conversation from his home studio in Altadena, California, to tell us about meeting his famous and infamous dad for the first time when he was already a successful musician, writing scores for popular TV shows like Roundhouse.
So I was adopted at a very young age, probably 3 months, and my adoptive parents did not know who the birth parents were, only that they were in the arts somehow. So, you know, cut to 30 years later, I'm about to get married to Stacia, the love of my life. And my adoptive parents said, you know, now might be a good time for you to search for your birth parents. Since you're getting married, you're starting your own family. You know, and I hadn't done it before just because I didn't want to hurt their feelings or for whatever reason. And so I did. I kind of initiated a search through adoptive services here in LA County. And very soon after that, they put me in touch with my birth mother, Celia, who was living in Australia. And you know, we spoke by phone and had a very tearful reunion on the phone. And then we met when she came over to the States for my wedding in 94. And at that point, you know, well, let me back up a bit. So when I went down to post-adoptive services and to find out, you know, everything I could find out, they brought out a book that had my whole history and birth certificate. And that's when I saw David Van Cortlandt Crosby's name on the birth certificate. I didn't really put it together at that moment. I thought, you know, maybe this is another guy named David Crosby. But through some musical channels, I found out his name wasn't, his middle name is, you know, in fact, Van Cortlandt. And so then it just kind of all made sense. Like, you know, I've been doing music my whole life, started very young. And that kind of made it very clear where that talent kind of came from, at least part of it. so, yeah, I had that information. I didn't act on it right away, only because I thought it would be weird, you know, for me to just ring him up and say, hey, I know it's been a while, but here I am. So I, you know, Stacia and I got married soon after. We had our daughter Gracie, and you know, I just started thinking about, should I approach him? How should I do it? That all changed when I got the news that David had to leave a CSN tour because he was deathly ill, like near to dying. Needed a liver transplant. It didn't look good. And that's when I kind of stepped up my efforts, thinking, well, you know, maybe he would like to meet me. If something bad happens to him, now would be a good time for me to kind of act on this. So I was working with a guitar player, Marty Walsh, on a television show at the time. And one day he just said, hey, you know, he knew my story and that I hadn't contacted David. And he said, I know CSN's keyboard player, Mike Finnegan, and I can put you in touch with him. I said, well, that'd be great, you know. And so he did, and I called Mike. And we had a great talk, and you know, I said, you know, I'd like to meet David if he's willing or has any interest in that. And at that point, I think David had already undergone his liver transplant and was doing okay. So he was kind of out of the woods, but not completely. So, yeah, Mike said, well, yeah, I'm going to go see him in the hospital and I'll ask him about this, but I don't want to kill him with the news. So I was kind of waiting for him to make that connection. And a few weeks later, David called me one morning and we spoke and made a plan to meet when he had to come down to UCLA for some post-operative tests and things. And we agreed to meet at UCLA Medical Center, like outside the cafeteria. So that was the day that we met, and that was also the day that Stacia, my wife, was to be induced into labor with Gracie. So, you know, it's kind of a wild day in the fact that I met my birth father and became a father, you know, in a 24-hour period. So it was pretty wild. And, it was kind of great timing in a sense, because I was so preoccupied, as you can imagine, with Gracie's arrival, that it took a little bit of the importance, the nervousness out of the Crosby meeting. I had kind of more important things to get to, but, you know, we met and we just kind of instantly hit it off. You know, we started talking about our lives and started talking about music and bonding over music. And we became good pals pretty quickly, I would say. It was once we met in person and saw each other and started talking, it was not awkward at all, and it wasn't weird. It just became kind of a friendship, a brotherhood, more or less.
I think more people should do it. What happens if Bob and Joni try to write together?
Yeah.
Nuclear explosion?
Right. Yeah.
What happens if...
Well, you and Joni wrote a song together.
We did, it was
English.
A good song.
It's a great song.
I met her in a French cafe. She slipped in sideways like a cat. Sidelong glances with a wary little strain. She sticks in his mind like that.
Yeah, it's kind of a discouraging event to write with Joni.
Mm.
You give her some really good stuff that you really like, and she just takes it and runs to the goddamn horizon with it.
Yeah.
She took it and just went.
Yeah.
The picture that I gave her sparked her, and she had I see that. And Paris bloomed right there, and that girl in this little clicky spike heels, you could see her.
Yeah, yeah.
It's...
And you had not collaborated much before. You'd written Broken Bird with Nash. Wooden Ships, right, with Kantner and Stills. Yeah.
Wooden Ships was the breakout. That's where I started doing it. I really hadn't been willing to do that at all with anybody until Stephen. Mm-hmm. And Stephen swung so hard, and the Birds didn't. That's why he pulled me. So hard, he swung. My biggest criticism of the Birds didn't swing. Not like that. They wouldn't know a push beat from a beat. You know, it's just not their thing. Stills did. He swings hard to this day.
Yeah.
He can't help it. He swings. His groove is a real groove. He makes you move. Can you hold still to Stills' music? No, you can't.
You cannot.
Absolutely cannot. No freaking way. You'd be dead. If you're in listening to Stephen Stills play and you're holding still, they should bury you right away because you're going to start to stink.
Yeah.
But I awoke this morning. I dove beneath my watch the sea fish roll.
It's a large thing that I probably never told anybody this, but it's one of the main reasons I got out of the Birds and went to try and work with Stephen.
Mm-hmm.
As good a musician as they were, and God knows I give credit to Roger for being a really good musician. But they never in their lives swung like that. They don't know how.
And you and Stephen, when after the Birds, when you were shopping yourself around to try to get a new recording contract, you and Stephen actually did a session together as "quote unquote" the Frozen Noses.
No, somebody else came up with that.
Somebody else came up with that. Because I was
B. Mitchell Reed called it that.
Oh, B. Mitchell Reed did.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Mitch was the one who did it.
One of the coolest DJ
jock at that
LA.
Time. Yeah. The thing about those tapes.
Yeah.
And they show you that we didn't know how to make records yet.
Right, right.
But they show you another thing.
Mm-hmm.
They swing Stills. If you can get him to play with you, it's gonna swing. He can't do anything else. It doesn't even know how to not swing. He can't do it. If he picks up a guitar, he's going to make you move. It's something in how he handles time. He's just a damn genius at it.
Well, he grew up in South America, did he not?
And a large part of it,
swing down there.
And the South.
Yeah.
And he was a blues freak, you know.
Yeah.
God knows blues musicians understand time. But he's a talent. He's a damn genius at it, man.
Do you guys still talk to each other, you and
yes,
Steven?
Yes, yeah.
That's good.
We text each other.
I hear he's a very good writer as well, actually.
Yeah. Very.
Yeah.
He's really good wordsmith, and he's still in there. He just can't hear you.
He's got deafness.
He's deaf.
Yeah.
Turn it up to 11 every night for 50 years. That's what's going to happen.
Right.
Neil's
right.
Deaf too.
So is Phil, actually.
Yeah. I know. I just saw him. He had an idea of trying to get me and his son and my son, mm-hmm. you know, father-son thing, mm-hmm. just get a drummer, try something.
That would be cool.
It'd be interesting. His son's a pretty good guitar player, though. I get that. And mm-hmm. Phil's interesting. It's just, I don't know if I've got the energy to build another band, another chemistry at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got two really good bands, mm-hmm. two really good record producers. If I've got any energy to do anything, I have the window there. You know, it is a little difficult that Michael moved to Spain.
Right.
Because I don't.
Michael League.
Well, I would love to go to Spain.
Yeah.
But spending, you know, 8 hours with a mask on in a airliner is a little much for me. If I could get Michael and Becca and Michelle to come to Santa Barbara, well, then I might.
Yeah.
I might.
Yeah.
I might try that chemistry again. It's a really good one, man. It's very contributive and very open, and all four people get to really, really influence it. I'm not the main guy.
Yeah.
Everybody's pretty much equal contributors.
Yeah, I actually sat in on some of the recording sessions for Here If You Listen, and I could see that chemistry in action.
There was good. Wonderful.
There was no like you being the rock star.
No.
Everybody was generous
and
listening.
Into it.
Yeah, and into it.
And Michael is a really good producer. He's really good at it.
Yeah.
And he's got a wonderful sense of he's a really good composer and a really good producer both.
Mm-hmm.
And Beck and Michelle, man, they're smart and tough and strong. And these are not shy women. They are strong artists, both of them. And they got an opinion and they're not afraid to tell you.
Yeah.
And that makes for real chemistry. Yeah. So if I could get that going again one more time, I'd try one, make another record there. And James and I are already trying to make another one of ours.
After For Free.
Yeah. We can't help it, you know. He and I, it's just what we do is make up songs and we already got some more.
Yeah. So
I got one going, man. I've got one going.
Well, there's a guitar, there's a piano. Have at it.
Yeah.
No. Anyway, so let's talk about the songs on For Free. One of them, you got to collaborate with your hero, Donald Fagen.
Boy, that just knocked my socks off.
When did you first hear Steely Dan, and how did it strike you?
I think the first time I heard Steely Dan was on the radio. Probably that. Probably Ricky Don't Lose That Number.
Right.
That's a great fucking record.
Yeah.
Well, I loved it because it was complex and it had real chords. Then along comes Asia. And Asia is probably the best record I ever heard. Maybe. Of all. The top number one record in my life. Followed really closely on the heels of it by Gaucho. So they gut punched me 2 years in a row, you know, or two times in a row over the space of 2 years, something like that. I don't think I'm ever going to experience anything like that.
Yeah.
Donald and Walter, that's one of the best chemistries that ever existed. God alone knows what those two guys are like inside, you know.
Yeah.
But, man, could they do it.
Yeah.
The words, the chords, the melodies, the producing, the recording, Donald singing, their structure, their is just so beautiful. It's just so beautiful. And it creamed me, absolutely creamed me. And I've been trying to imitate them ever since. I'll steal any lick I can. They're just wonderful. And I've been trying to befriend Donald ever since I first met him because I respect him so much. I think he's one of the finest musicians in the world, and writers and singers and players and everything. And I wasn't trying to work him, but I wanted to be his friend, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But in the back of my head, you know, I thought, well, maybe someday I'll get to write with him. Because I'm always, you know, since it works, I'm always looking to do it with anybody good. Knopfler. I'd like to write with Knopfler. He's a really strange and wonderful guy. But I did ask Donald, you know, you don't have any, like, stuff laying around that you didn't use, do you?
Mm-hmm.
And the first nine times I dropped that, he said no.
Oh.
And then about the 10th or the 11th time, he sent me those words. That's a really good set of words. It's a great little story song.
Yeah, Rodriguez for One Night.
Yeah.
You know, David and Donald had developed a friendship over the years. When we were making this record, out of the blue, like a gift from heaven, Donald sent us the lyrics to Rodriguez for a Night and said, you know, see what you can do with these. And I was pretty scared shitless of screwing it up. It's because here's one of my all-time idols, heroes, musical heroes in the world. And I knew he was going to hear the song, obviously. And so I wasn't trying to make a Steely Dan track, but once I put the lyrics up on the piano and started playing, you know, Donald's lyrics, they almost dictate a melody to you. At least they did to me. When I just read them over and over, and the melody just kind of presented itself magically. It was, I could almost hear how Donald would approach it, you know, and I thought, well, that's, you know, if you're going to do something with these that honor this great story of, you know, this guy, this guy, our protagonist, or Donald's protagonist in the story is very jealous of Rodriguez because he's effortlessly cool and charming and gets the ladies. And I just could hear how it should go. I don't know. I just kind of emptied my mind and started let my hands play chords and singing some melodies, and it just kind of came together, and I was so happy with it, and then also very nervous that Donald would not like it. But when he came back and said, great track, great song, it was one of the best feathers that I could ever imagine having in my cap, put it that way.
I once rode with an angel through the Hall Royal car dry run, until one day she made it clear that I could never be the one. And then she met the outlaw Rodriguez. It was one night.
James, who's better at writing Steely Dan music than I am, wrote the music to it, and we Steely Dan'd it right into the Middle Distance, you know, and thrilled ourselves doing it.
Yeah.
Thank you, Donald Fagen, you kind fucker.
It's fantastic. And I remember the very first time I heard of James, shortly after you met him, we were at a CSN show, and you took me out to the band bus, or some bus, your bus probably, to pop a cassette in a little tape deck and play me a song called Morrison.
Mm.
And I said to you at the time, I said, that's the best song Steely Dan never played.
and you could tell that, yeah, okay, well.
Big time.
There's several things in a row. One, he knew I loved Steely Dan.
Right.
Two, he loved Steely Dan.
Right.
Three, that was the first time that I realized what my son had under the hood. I really didn't know until that moment. And when he came with that set of words and he'd written that music to it, I nearly died. It freaked me out how good he was. And then he got better.
Lost in a Paris graveyard, carrying his own ring, and I've seen that movie, and it
first song that David and I collaborated on was Morrison. He had heard some of my music, I think, and realized that I could play, I could write and sing. And he came to my house here in Altadena one day and brought a set of lyrics, the lyrics to Morrison, and just said, hey, see what hits you with this, you know, see what you can do with this. And, you know, I felt immense pressure to come up with something good, only because, you know, I didn't want to screw it up and have him hate it. So I, you know, I took a few stabs at it, because I wanted it to be really good. And I remember, you know, thinking about his relationship with Joni, and we had bonded over our love of Joni, and I was freaking out that, you know, he produced her first record and everything. And so when I sat down to write that song, I just tried to kind of channel Joni in some way, like think about what she might write to these lyrics. And then I just let it flow, and I said, well, I'm just going to, you know, sing it and play it and show him. And thank goodness he loved it. Like on first listen, he got real quiet, and I was super nervous, and he said, rewind it, play it again. And we just sat in my driveway, you know, in my truck, and listened to it, and he got a big smile on his face, and that's when I knew that it was kind of game on, like we were going to have some fun making music together.
And also, there's something about the rhythm of that song that lets you swing really hard over it. You know, like, it's fucking awesome.
He can't help swinging, man.
Yeah.
He's you know, he really can't help it. It's just built in. Some people just have that stills, you know, I was talking about. James is like that. Yeah. He could be a drummer, no problem. He does play drums well.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. No, he plays... His main thing is a keyboard, because keyboard can now do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Keyboard can be drums, bass, guitar, piano, horns, harp, harpsichord, car crash, anything, flute, any instrument in the world is now sampled at high grade to a keyboard. Several of the guitar solos on the record that you are talking about, that you liked, were not done on the guitar.
Right. Yeah, they even sound like flamenco guitar. Like, there's
one... That flamenco track, one...
It's amazing. It's changed.
That one, Curved Air.
Yes, Curved Air, with flamenco guitar.
Crazy! Okay, well, on this record, there are guitar solos, okay? On our hit single, River Rise?
Yes.
That hot guitar on there?
Yes.
James.
That's awesome.
Keyboard.
That is so awesome. How did you get Michael McDonald involved in singing on that track?
I threatened his life. Simple, you know. No, Michael and I, man, are buddies. We've been friends for a very long time. I admire him tremendously, as you know. I've said for probably the last 10 years, when somebody says, well, who's the best guy singer? I would say Stevie Wonder and Michael McDonald. And I'd say, I don't know anybody better than them.
So River Rise, it does sound like a hit single, actually, I have to say.
Well, I've been saying to people, you know, the story that I've been proposing,
yes.
putting out there,
yes.
is that I have, and I have said this a number of times, James, write us a goddamn single so we can make some money,
yeah.
so we can pay the rent, for
yeah.
God's sakes. James always laughed it off and just kept trucking. Because he yeah. doesn't give a shit about making money, and he doesn't give a shit about that, any of that. He cares about making great songs. But in the course of making great songs, he just happened to also make a single.
Right.
He just, he had a moment where that's where it went. I don't think he set out to write it as a single. He set
yeah.
out to write it as a great song, and it is.
It's very rousing. It's awesome.
And he didn't have the second verse, and he
mm.
asked me to write it.
Mm.
I tried. I didn't come up with it. Michael shows up to do the choruses.
Huh.
And he says, Michael, what should the second verse be? And Michael said, how about, and he wrote the second verse.
Oh, wow.
Kaboom.
Yeah, that's great.
And David and I were talking about, you know, the harmony parts on it. And I told him, you know, what would be great on this is Michael McDonald. I had heard them, you know, only briefly sing, you know, maybe in a studio or somewhere. And I had met Michael at the Libero up in Santa Barbara. He's one of my all-time heroes musically as a writer, singer, keyboard player, pianist. He's kind of at the apex for me. So getting to meet him was a huge thrill. And I guess selfishly, I was plugging that in hopes that I might get to work with Michael on a record, you know? I just thought that, and I knew that the blend of their voices would be great on this song. And so I said, yeah, I'll ask him. And so he put me in touch with Michael. We spoke and he said, sure, I'd love to sing on it. And I said, well, I can come up to Santa Barbara, you know, and to your studio or anywhere. And he said, no, you know, I'll come down to your place in Altadena. And, that was kind of unbelievable that Michael McDonald was coming to my little home studio. It was kind of surreal. I mean, you have to understand, I worshiped, you know, the Doobie Brothers. And going back to, I think I was 19, you know, when I saw them at the Forum on the Real Love tour with my buddy Victor Rocha. We were huge Michael McDonald and Doobie Brother fans. And you know, my friend Victor's always been a huge champion, and he said something like, you'll get to work with him one day. You know, it only took 40 years, but he was right. You know, he nailed it. So Michael came to my studio and was just so gracious and so cool. And at that point I think I had a verse and a half written and the chorus is written. So I knew we wanted him singing harmony on the choruses, so I knew we could get that done. But I, in the course of doing that, I told him, you know, I'm really stuck on this bridge. I can't crack it. And this other verse. And he said, well, let's work on it if you'd like. And I thought, well, yeah, you know, why not? So he, you know, we proceeded to finish the song, and he sang all the backgrounds that day here at my studio. And yeah, it was incredible. Like, he's so good. And he got David's melodies right away and, you know, created this blend with David on the choruses that's pretty unstoppable. So that's another one of those, you know, pinch yourself moments, getting to do that with Michael.
It's light in California. The voices are speaking low. And the wheels line up, point the direction they wanna go. The cold is hanging on now, the heat will be here soon. And those same old thoughts coming back around like a black moon. Let the river rise, open up the skies. Not gonna wash away. Let the walls come down, turn around into a fortress. Let the river rise,
sky. Time won't slip away. Let the clock run out. Don't care about it. Not today.
The golden light surrounding the sea of humanity. And the wind has its own language.
What a powerful song. The opening track on David's new album, For Free, out July 23rd. Please join us for the next episode of Freak Flag Flying, where we explore how forming the band CPR with his son James Raymond and guitarist Jeff Pivar liberated them all to become more creative and freshen up the arrangements of Cross classics like Deja Vu and Homeward Through the Haze. We'll also talk about young singer-songwriter Sarah Jarosz's heavenly harmony on the title track of For Free. This Freak Flag Flying podcast was brought to you by Osiris Media. Find them and many other music podcasts at osirispod.com. Thank you, David Crosby. Thank you, James Raymond. And special thanks for allowing us to feature your wonderful music, CPR, and of course, David Crosby. Thank you also to Joel Jack Studios and to Hyde Street Studios' Jack Kurtzman and William Chasen for being totally cool dudes. Interviews by me, Steve Silverman. Produced by Zach Brogan and Tom Marshall. Art by Mark Dowd. Remember, friends, music is love. See you down the road on the next episodes of Freak Flag Flying.
After sold-out runs at the Public Theater and London's National Theater, Here Lies Love, the groundbreaking musical from David Byrne and Fatboy Slim, opens on Broadway this summer. Get swept up in what Vogue calls a life-giving, roof-raising blast of pure joy about the rise and fall of Imelda Marcos at the hands of the Philippine People Power Revolution. Here Lies Love is a revolutionary experience unlike any other on Broadway. It's a party and you're invited. Get tickets at HereLiesLoveBroadway.com. After sold-out runs at the Public Theater and London's National Theater, Here Lies Love, the groundbreaking musical from David Byrne and Fatboy Slim, opens on Broadway this summer. Get swept up in what Vogue calls a life-giving, roof-raising blast of pure joy about the rise and fall of Imelda Marcos at the hands of the Philippine People Power Revolution. Here Lies Love is a revolutionary experience unlike any other on Broadway. It's a party and you're invited. Get tickets at HereLiesLoveBroadway.com.
Osiris.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bruce.
And I'm Nolan, and this is the Corner of Gray Street podcast. As longtime Dave Matthews Band fans, we set out to create a podcast to dive deep into the past, present, and future of DMB.
Not only do we recap and review shows within an ongoing tour, but we revisit past shows from throughout the band's history, conduct interviews with a wide variety of guests with ties to DMB, and create unique and exclusive content like our Concerts on the Corner series.
Whether you're a fan of the band or just a fan of great music, we think you'll find something you'll enjoy. We can't wait to see you on the Corner of Gray Street.